And we're going to take your phone calls for the rest of this hour with our guest Albert Taylor on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Albert Taylor, our guest. And tell me a little bit more about people who might take part in your experiments. And what kind of experiments, again, do you perform?
Well, right now, everything is under the umbrella of the nature of human consciousness. So we are looking for people who would want to experience the psychomantium. Phase one is just the encounters that I talked about with deceased loved ones. Phase two is altered states of consciousness, including out-of-body experiences. We've been slowly moving into phase two, and people have been having really interesting results. They feel the vibration. And this is from a conscious perspective, meaning that they're not falling asleep like normally what I do when I have an out-of-body experience. They're actually laying there meditating and starting to feel vibrations. So that's phase two. Other things that we have open membership right now to paranormal research investigations, to my group, where people are interested in paranormal investigation and research and are welcome to come and interview and join our group possibly after the probationary period and actually go out on some of the most exciting investigations that we have had to date. And George, we haven't even talked about the attack aspect of some of the investigations that I've been on. We haven't even touched on that yet.
Well, you better start. What do you mean?
Okay, then you want me to tell you a little bit now?
Yep.
Okay, one of the more interesting. Now, when I first began this, I wasn't looking for any negative type of encounters. A guest you had on a couple weeks ago, I think it was Brad Steiker.
Yes.
He was talking about incubi and succubi type of investigations and things that he was familiar with. I was listening to that show, and I was shocked. Because this began four years ago, our investigation into, and I'm only using those terms because that's the only thing I can associate with it that people will understand is incubi or incubus or succubus kind of like investigations or behavior. And the group Paranormal Research Investigations, we do what's called paranormal crisis management. And what that is when people have situations that have become out of control, they don't know how to handle it, they have nowhere else to go, they give us a call. So usually it's always a crisis when people call us, and we go out and try to investigate the situation and try to help the person that is suffering or the victim. 4 years ago, it began where a woman in Tustin, California, called our PRI phone and told us that she was being attacked by something. And it was, she called it some kind of shadow person. She thought of that because she said she saw shadows before in the very beginning, before it actually began to assault her. We went out to the location, and when we got there, the first thing I did is I noticed that she had a very congested, her place was a condominium, but it was extremely congested with all kinds of artwork and things like that. So I went around the house taking pictures and asking her questions. This was where it started really getting interesting. She started describing this thing becoming physical with her. And as she began to describe it, I started having visions or memories of what Dr. Barry Taft, his investigation that he did back in 1970 with the Doris Byther incident, which ended up becoming the movie The Entity.
Yes.
Okay, I started thinking about that, and there were certain questions that I wanted to ask her, but she's an 82-year-old woman, and how do you start asking her these type of things that, you know, are very, very, you know, very, very intense?
Very
and some
slowly.
Of them sexual. And then she said, I said, well, you know, before this happens, do you smell anything? And she said, I smell a rotten smell before it comes into my room. It's the most putrid smell I've ever encountered. And I thought immediately that's the same thing that happened in the Barry Taft investigation. And then I said, well, when it assaults you, you know, what exactly happens? And this is the way she described it, being an 82-year-old woman. She said, you know how a man makes love to you without the love? That's the way she described it. I thought, wow, that's fascinating. She said, and sometimes it bites me. And I thought, oh, my God, okay. I said, do you have any bite marks on you now? And she said, yeah, there's one on my inner thigh. And I had my camera up, and I was my video camera, and I said, well, can I see it? And she said, sure. So she pulls up her nightgown and shows me her inner thigh. And, George, I have to tell you, I was shocked because there on her inner thigh was an oval pattern of teeth marks and a deep, deep down bruise. And I said to her, now, being neutral and being an investigator, the first thing I thought to myself, and I asked her, I said, do you wear dentures? Because in the nature of this business, George, there's going to be a certain percentage of people who call us that are going to be a little mental and unstable.
Sure. So you think you may be a little self-abuse
here? Yeah, that's just
here?
The nature of the game. You know, right. Not everybody, but that's the way it is.
That's a good question.
You know, so, and she said no, and I had her open her mouth, and I looked and made
you
sure
even,
she didn't have dentures.
You checked to see if she had false teeth?
Well, it's an investigation. It's an investigation. She called us, and this is what we do, because, like I said, I'm not, you know, saying that she was mentally unstable or had any psychosis, but for me to actually know and be able to say, no, she does not, I have to be able to see that. And that's part of the investigation. So after that, what she did is she began to tell me what happens. And she said that this thing, first she smells this horrific smell, and then she feels this presence in her bedroom. She has a bathroom in her bedroom. And she says she feels this presence in the doorway in the bathroom. And then she actually feels it climb onto the bed and then attack her. She said that also, there many people had come out there, other investigators and other people from her church, and they told her to put salt around her bed to protect her. Well, she said after she did that, the very next morning, I guess the thing or whatever it was, to show her that the salt had no effect on her, on it, what happened was the next morning she woke up and all the salt that was on the floor around her bed was in her bed and the sheets. She said many times that it would try to snatch the Bible out of her hand. Another time she was with her niece, who it disturbed and woke them both up in the middle of the night. And in some cases, it was very brutal.
Do you believe her?
Well, this is, you know, I can't say I believe her or disbelieve her. This is what I'm looking for when I go to these things. I'm looking for evidence. I'm looking for some type of something I can measure, something I can record on videotape, something I can take a photograph of, or something like that. So what I did is I took my digital still camera, and I went around the entire house taking approximately 56 photos of the entire house. It just so happened that out of those 56 photos, two of those pictures came out severely distorted. And those two photos just happened to be the doorway where she said this thing was standing. Those pictures are on the website, and anybody's welcome to go look at them. And if you look at the distortions in the photographs, you can see it's very abnormal and something that would be very, very difficult to produce unless you were industrial light magic or something like that.
All right. Well, let's go to some of the phones. You ready?
Sure.
Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello. My name's Lucy. I'm calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Hello. Lucy.
I wanted to ask your guest, I was physically attacked and bruised by a ghost, and the last story you told, basically, I was held down by what felt like a male. I couldn't see a thing. It was in a theater, and I heard rushing up the stairs. Next thing I know, something is launching itself at me, pinning me down. And it just felt like pure evil. I was actually filming a ghost investigation on Ghost Hunter X. Mm-hmm. It was basically, I was a skeptic, and mm-hmm. I was interested in ghost investigations. And I, let alone believing in ghosts, I had no idea that you could be physically attacked by something that you couldn't see.
Right.
It just felt pure evil is the only way I can describe it.
Right. I totally understand what you're saying. And I would believe, and this is what our mission is because I want to help as many people as I can. And I believe there's a lot of people like yourself, a lot of women and some men who are out there suffering in silence because you have no place to share this. You have no place to go because this is so extraordinary and so out of the norm that most people would not even believe you.
How would you categorize these spirits, Albert?
Well, I use the terminology of incubus-like or succubus-like encounters or entities. I can't say they're just like the Greek mythology because the Greek mythology says that they're demons, and I don't necessarily believe in demons, but I have to identify these type of this behavior based on something that people can understand, and that's why I use the term incubus.
Would you call them evil?
I would say definitely negative, and if evil fits, anything that would assault an innocent person and violate them in the way that these things, I mean, this is I'm on my fifth investigation currently, and we will be doing another on Wednesday. Anything that would do that, I'd say if there is anything evil, that would be about as close to it as it gets. Now, I want to share something with her, because this is what I found out that works about 75% of the time. I don't necessarily understand clearings, if you've ever heard of a clearing.
No.
But what we've done, clearing is like you go around the house and it's basically you're using sage and you're praying. Now, I do understand the power of prayer.
I have heard the phrase cleansing.
Okay. But the power of prayer is very, very important. Whatever other label you put on it, cleansing, clearing, whatever that is, I really believe that that does work, because in the investigations that we've done, we've been able to help, out of four investigations, we've been able to help three of the people. Sometimes we had to come back several times and do my intuitives, do a clearing, and it took three times on the woman who was 82 years old. But what she reported is that the actual attacks and things like that subsided and went away. And that has been the same story I've gotten from three other people. So if you know anybody who understands clearing and cleansings and can do that for you, I really suggest that you have somebody come into your house and do that for you so that this horror that's happening to you can end.
Let's go to our first time caller line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Hey, how you guys?
Good.
Great.
Hey, I got a question for you. It's about EVPs. Now, my question is, spirits, I mean, where do they call home? I mean, if a person dies in one part of the country or in another country, can they roam across the earth, or are they omnipresent? I don't understand where or how they can, if they can travel in our physical world.
Okay, well, the first thing to do is forget about the physical world, because when we're talking about entity or disembodied consciousness, it's really a state of consciousness. Their state of consciousness is where their home is, wherever they think they belong. So the physical world geographically has nothing to do with it. They live in an area that's halfway between here and between a non-physical area. This is the best way that I can describe it. Now, imagine filling a beaker half full with dirt. And then you take this water, which is the astral substance or astral plane, and you start pouring it into that beaker. And as it goes into the beaker, when it touches the dirt, that part of the dirt is going to become mud. And as you continue to pour, part of the water is not going to seep down too far into the beaker, and some of it will be really dry. But then as you move upward, you'll encounter the mud, and then as you continue to move upward, it will be clear water. Well, the astral plane is, some of it permeates here, like the water and the mud is, and then some of it is not here. So, and all of it is not a physical place, it's a state of consciousness. So the state of consciousness that a lot of entities would reside at would be maybe on a lower vibration, depending on what their experiences were when they were here on Earth. So there are no limitations to where they could be, but generally, because they're still people, ghosts are people too, they're still trying to hang around where maybe their relatives are, or familiar places that they experienced or lived in their when they were alive.
Okay, so even though I'm here in Utah, my entire family is up in Canada, and they could still be with me down here, right?
If you think about them, yes, you can draw them right to you in an instant.
Okay.
In an instant.
Unless they cross over, right?
Well, yeah, unless they transition and move on to that next level. But, you know, because there's no time, it could be in our entire lifetime they could still be around. We don't know.
That's true. Well, how soon do you think a soul reincarnates?
I would say that depends on their pseudo-reality that they may be trapped in, if they're trapped at all. A lot of people, like maybe gurus and yogis and things like that, they don't have that little period of being trapped. But maybe somebody who's waiting for Judgment Day may be standing by their graveside or hanging around waiting for Gabriel to blow the horn, and that could go on for 100 to 200 years. So it all depends on their understanding of the afterlife and what that's really all about. And I have to tell you, being raised in Catholic school and being an altar boy, if I would depend on what they taught me in school, it would totally conflict with everything regarding out-of-body experiences that I've had.
East of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast with Albert Taylor. Hi there.
Hey, how are you? How
Good.
You doing, George? Hi, Albert.
How you doing?
Albert, I used to work at a factory before it shut down. There was a terrible explosion there and some men died.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell asleep one time on a job running machinery. The machine would run by itself. And I had an out-of-body experience, and it took everything possible to wake myself up.
Right.
Because I looked around, and I seen the men that were killed in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
They still had their work clothes on. They still had their helmets on. And many people have always said that the chairs would fly across the room and things would happen. They would hear screams and banging on the walls. Well, I always took it with a grain of salt until that day. And it wasn't that I was scared, Albert. It was just that it took everything possible for me to actually move my arm, because my hand was holding my head and I fell asleep in a chair.
Right.
And when I finally got my arm to move, I fell, I fell out of the chair and I woke up and I looked around, and the men that passed away in the explosion, you know, and this is in Niagara Falls, New York, North Tonawanda at the Oxy plant. And now the plant shut down, and people still to this day, even though the plant is completely leveled and all fenced in, every once in a while, somebody, you'll read in the paper
an encounter
that they've seen some of the men walking
right.
around.
Now, where you were in that air, in that state where you could not move, what that is when you fall asleep, there's a period where the physical body releases its grip on the soul consciousness, but you haven't moved out of your body. You're just neurologically disconnected. So that, but you can see and you can hear and all
that. Oh, I seen myself. I seen myself and I seen them. They looked right at me. They were walking around. They were looking around the tow motor. They were in the building. Some of the men were outside because there was about 17 men that were killed in the explosion.
Right.
And it was, they were as plain as day.
Right.
I mean, they
Well, they were stuck in that pseudo reality that I was talking about, because if their death happened real suddenly,
instantly,
they're going to be, first of all of a sudden, imagine if you were right now, you're on the phone with me, and all of a sudden you died instantly, yet you didn't feel any different. You would be so puzzled, and you, matter of fact, you might even continue to move around your house and do the things that you would do, that you had planned on doing tonight, without even thinking that you were dead. And that's maybe what, and because there's no time, that's why maybe they are still stuck in this pseudo reality of actually thinking that they are at work and going through the motions of that they used to do when they were alive. And when you were in that altered state, which is an out-of-body experience is an altered state, that's why you were able to perceive them. But they are there all the time, even when you aren't in that state.
Stay with us, Albert, and we'll take the rest of your phone calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Yeah, I'm about 8 feet deep, as a matter of fact, which is far better than being 6 feet under. I'll tell you that. Hey, let me tell you about the After Dark newsletter. Of course, you get one every month. Great newsletter. You can subscribe to it, but you will get a free CD when you do or renew, but this is not going to last for long. We've had it going for a couple months. I think it's only got about a month left. It's called Perfect Possession. It's on exorcisms, the original Father Malachi Martin interview with Art Bell, one of the old classics, by calling 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, final segment with our guest Albert Taylor. Albert, a couple websites here that you have. One of them we may have cooked and fried on you. but you have two, what, alberttaylor.com and then the PRI.com?
Correct.
Is there one you prefer over the other?
I think you can go to alberttaylor.com, and that will give you information on the classes. If I'm teaching a parapsychology class next month, and I'm traveling around to different places, so that'll give you a better idea of where I'll be in case you want to come see me and talk to me or tell me your story in person.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
It's all yours. Yes, Albert Taylor?
Yes.
Hi, how's it going? My name is Tim Macy's. I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia, east of the Rockies. And George Norrie, we appreciate so much what you do here. You're
well,
such a
thank
great,
you so much.
I mean, I'm shocked and amazed that there are people like you in the world. I'm calling you to tell you about a slight story that I had. I had my adenoids removed when I was 12 years old and had out-of-body experience beyond belief. Traversed through the illuminating light that you were talking about earlier, and then came shooting back and watched the people operating on me as well. And then as my consciousness came back from the corner of the room, shot back into my own body at a light speed, it seemed like.
Right.
I was wondering if you would think that this would make someone think that they were more psychic.
Well, you know, it sounds like you had a near-death experience.
Definitely.
And you know, numerous. There's 8 million people in the United States alone who've had near-death experience.
I know. I've touched a lot of people like this as well, yes.
Yeah.
It's very common.
Yeah,
right?
Yes, it is. Because we're at the stage now where we're able to resuscitate people and bring them back, as opposed to a few, you know, maybe 2 decades ago.
Right,
so the thing about it is, a lot of those people come back switched on, is what I call it.
And what does that mean?
They have these capabilities.
I keep on having these crazy dreams that keep on coming true.
Right. Well, you know what I suggest to you is write them down. Because dreams are like pieces to the puzzle.
I have been.
Good. Excellent. Because dreams are like pieces to the puzzle. And if you don't keep all the pieces, you never get to see the picture. And a lot of people are switched on now when they have near-death experiences and even out-of-body experiences. And you will be like turned on to extrasensory perceptions that you were
That's
dormant.
That's exactly what's been happening.
Right.
When I tell people these bits of information, they say I'm crazy, but then when I keep on predicting the truth, they say, okay.
Most people are going to be skeptical if they're not experiencers. That's just the name of the game. But keep to your truth, keep writing it down, and keep sharing those things, because I believe that those things are supposed to help other people. So keep doing what you're doing. Don't change.
How many people, Albert, do you think are experiencing paranormal episodes in their life? I would bet it's 80% easy.
Most people, I'd say maybe even higher, and they probably experience it and go into a belligerent state of denial and try to talk themselves out of it or try to rationalize it. But I would say that it probably, at minimum, 80%, maybe more.
First-time caller line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, how y'all doing tonight?
We're fine, thanks.
This is Rachel calling from Jennings, Missouri.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Rachel. Sure.
Hi. And Albert, I've got a question for you, and it came across from an experience that I had with my children a couple of years back when my youngest was born. They were having some disturbances in their bedroom, and my daughter was talking about winged things with cat's teeth and red eyes floating over my now middle child's crib. And I went through it, and I was asking what was there, trying to figure it out. And the only thing I had on me was the computer in the living room with the speaking type programming on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually typed the question. I asked the question, and I actually put a time on it. Woke up the next morning, and in the middle of all this gibberish, there was actually the line of, I'm not telling.
Hmm.
Now, I'm wondering if you've ever tried using that program in your other meanderings and wanderings.
Is that dragon speak?
I don't remember which one it was. It wasn't even my computer. It was my boyfriend's at the time.
I have had, and I don't know if it was a glitch in the computer or what, but I have a speak and say kind of a software too, and it's called dragon speak.
Yeah.
And during the process of, I tried to write, I'm working on a new book. I tried to write part of the book with this dragon speak, because you just talk into it and it types words. And I have to admit that, you know, I expected if it makes an error to just type out gibberish, but it typed out some things that were quite startling. So I don't know if that was a weird kind of glitch, or maybe something else like automatic writing. Maybe something else is capable of communicating through this device, similar to what it does when it tries to communicate with us through recording devices and digital recorders.
Yes. Well, I was wondering about, because, I mean, it was a microphone device, and that one actually had a pretty good accuracy rating on it.
You know, and since it's a microphone, maybe it's picking up some subtle energies like when you collect an EVP. I don't know. I think it's interesting, and if that's the case, I think it would be interesting to do some research on it and see what happens.
Interesting way, though, to communicate from the spirit world if you could electronically take over a computer.
Completely. And, you know, exactly. And you know what? I don't know what they can't do, since if something non-physical can put a voice print on a chromium oxide tape or on a digital, in the memory of a digital recorder, then who knows what they're capable of doing, depending on how much energy they can focus in the physical world.
Next up, Wildcard Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George. Hi, Albert.
Hello.
Hi. This is Sean in Santa Clarita.
Hi, Sean.
California. Hi. Yeah.
I had a question, or actually, I had a short story and a question about something that happened to me. It was, I was about 15 years old and I had an out of body experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I was walking around my house and I saw myself, but as I went into my bedroom, I felt myself starting to fall. And I saw this number 7. And, sorry, give me one second. This big voice said, these are the levels of consciousness. And I just wondered if you'd heard anything about that.
I hadn't heard anything about that, but I can relate it to what we were, George and I were talking about earlier, about the seven levels of consciousness on the astral plane. I think if you've never heard of the astral plane or any of the things that we spoke about earlier, and you heard that, I think that's awfully coincidental. And maybe it was quite insightful that you had that experience and that it does apply to what we were talking about earlier.
Hans Christian King, Albert, has spirit guides that communicate with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've been in the astral plane so often, do you get spirit guides?
Oh, I have one in particular that is always with me. It's the one, when I was 5 years old, George, I was in the paralysis, and sitting on the foot of my bed was this transparent image, humanoid image. And it called out my name. It said, Albert, like that. And it terrified me. I didn't know what it was. And then 30 years later, I'm in the paralysis again, and this transparent humanoid image is sitting on the foot of my bed and calls out my name in the exact same voice that it did 30 years before. Terrified me. And it took a long time through my out-of-body experiences because I was having encounters with the non-physical humanoid entities. And it terrified me, and it took me a good while to become used to this particular entity and to actually start asking questions and finding out what exactly it is. And here it is years later, where definitely I would call it, you can call it a spirit guide. I would say that depending on your religious beliefs, you would call it a guardian angel. Mm-hmm. And if you're a metaphysician, you would call it a higher self, or like Robert Monroe says, intelligent species, or a more advanced version of yourself.
Robert Monroe was a giant in the astral projection world.
He was amazing. And his daughter, I met Lori Monroe, who's running the Institute now, and she's a wonderful person, and she's carrying on his great work.
Let's go to our international line. And where are you calling from?
Hi, this is James calling from St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada.
Oh, hi, James.
Go ahead, James.
Hi, George. I love your show. Albert, I had a question for you. Is your out-of-body experiences in full color?
Yes.
Everything's in color?
Yes.
Wow. Are you sure it's not a form of lucid dreaming?
Well, you know, the thing, like I shared before, I actually went to a person's house, and I should not have been able to recall the information and exactly what was there. And that's just one of the many experiments. And I have to tell you, even when I had that experience, yes, I did think it was dreaming. It wasn't until it happened on numerous occasions that I was actually able to describe what I saw and in detail, and that's when it slowly convinced me, because I'm the biggest skeptic in the world. I never believed in out-of-body experiences, and I never even knew they existed. So it took a while to convince me, but after it did, then I began to explore it, and then that's when it began to change me.
Wow. It's an amazing subject you got on tonight. Thank you very much.
All right, James. Thank you. How about the ability to go into the future? Have you been able to do that, Albert?
Yeah, George. And, you know, this is, I don't give a lot of warnings about out-of-body experiences, but that's one of them. Because, I was testing all the parameters, George. I didn't have any boundaries, and I guess I should have, but I found out the hard way. Because this is a very real thing. Whether you believe it or not, if you have this experience and you try to experiment on going into the future, what's going to happen, or what's happened to me, is that you may see something that is bound to unfold. It doesn't mean that necessarily you can change it, because there's other things, factors that have to do with the future and other experiences that have to do with other people. So some things are going to unfold no matter what you do here in the physical. And it may be something that may be very, very unpleasant. And it may be something that may affect your life. It may not be way on the other side of the world. It may have something to do with your immediate family. So that happened to me, and I came back, and I was devastated, George, and I did everything I could to try to stop this particular event from happening, and it happened anyway, no matter what, and I couldn't do anything about it. And I couldn't even hide it from my relatives because I was so depressed. They kept asking me, what's wrong with you? What's going on? So something wrong with you because of this event. So now, I recommend go into the past. Check out the past. See, go between lives, between lives. Check out as many things as you want, but be very cautious when you go into the future because you may see something you may not want to see unfold, and it may happen regardless of what you try to do to stop it.
How far into the future did you go?
Only about a month or two.
Oh, that's it.
And it was the disintegration of my family at the time. It was devastating, and it stopped me from ever doing that again.
Yeah, not very pleasant, was it?
No, it wasn't. George, I tried everything I could to stop it from happening, and it was useless. It unfolded.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Marcus from Iowa.
Hi, Marcus. Go ahead.
Hi, Marcus.
All right. How are you guys doing tonight?
Great.
Good to hear. All right. I want to talk to you a little bit about the similarities between shadow people and I know you really don't believe in demons per se, but the similarities between the two.
Ah, but I do.
So do I. But, all right, I'm a paranormal investigator, and I've been on quite a few cases. And every time I run into a case where I hear about shadow people and or demons, they seem to have a lot of similarities with each other. They're both malicious, deceiving. One weird thing that I've run into with shadow people is with other entities, they'll leave behind EVPs, and they'll have, like, electromagnetic waves, where shadow people sometimes will have it, sometimes they won't when we encounter it.
Mm-hmm.
And where another entity where you can actually physically see what's going on with it, you're going to encounter those waves. My question for you is with the shadow people and the entity and the demons, I can see where a demon wouldn't have the electromagnetic waves because it's a different kind of being. Where I was just wondering what you thought about a shadow person being a different kind of being or just another entity.
You know, I can't say that I have enough evidence to say that it's just another entity because, like you, I collect EVPs when it's just an entity. And I've collected many, and a lot of entities, and which is the holy grail of a paranormal investigator, is interactive, which is that's all of us. We all want something that's going to communicate with us. A shadow person or people, I don't quite know what that is because every time you see one of these things, it's so fleeting, except for what happened to George tonight. So I haven't seen any videotape that anybody has captured one. I would love to if somebody has. So to analyze it and say exactly what it is and to even say if I did believe, I can't say I believe in demons. I can't say I disbelieve in demons. I'm looking for data to support either way. So if it is a demon, I would look for data to support that. And even then, it's very difficult to categorize something with just a very limited amount of data that you collect on paranormal investigations. I'm sure you know that.
The one that crossed my wall a few hours ago probably was trying to get your impact, Albert.
Oh, really?
Not mine. Yeah, I think so.
Well,
you were the one speaking at the time. He probably wanted a little recognition from you.
Well, let me get out my camera with night vision, and if it shows up, I want to put that on our website, too.
Wildcard Line, welcome to the show. You're on the air. Hi there.
Good evening, Mr. Norrie. This is James from Chicago.
Oh, hi, James. How are you?
I'm good. And how are you and Mr. Taylor?
I'm doing great, James. How are you?
Good, good.
We're all good. Let's go.
Okay. As you know, Mr. Norrie, as a Buddhist, my number one goal is to help others to become happy and to achieve world peace through the intimate knowledge of ourselves and the effect mm-hmm. their actions have on our environment. Listening to the show tonight, I was thinking about how paranormal activity is actually a projection of our own lives onto our environment and how, like, the shadow image that you saw across your wall was actually something that you projected from within your own life into your environment. It's not something that's independent of you with its own will.
Do you agree with him, Albert?
Well, one of the things I do in my research is I suspend my belief system. It doesn't go with me in paranormal investigation. So I do have one, and it's very clear and it's precise. But when it comes down to paranormal investigation, I suspend that. And that means, you know, whether I believe in Buddhism or self-realization or Christianity or any of those things, they don't go with me into my investigation. So I would say that without data and proof, because I'm a scientist and I like repeatability, I can't say either way.
Albert, Soul Traveler, is the book still available?
Yes, it is still available. Still in the bookstore, still on Amazon.com. And you don't even have to buy the book. It's in the library. Just read chapter 10 or read as much as you can for free, because it's all about the message, George.
It must have been thrilling when it hit the L.A. Times bestselling list.
It was
huh?
a dream come true. Just, you know, to get on the bestsellers list is a miracle. To become number one was beyond my wildest expectations.
Soul Traveler should be a movie, Albert.
George, can I give out a phone number that people can call in
sure,
case they want to know more information?
If
you're interested, if you're in Southern California, please get, and you want to know any more information about my paranormal research, the book, my parapsychology class that I teach, or anything else that we're involved in, the Psychomantium, you can call 714-533-2311. That's 714-533-2311, and they will be able to answer any questions you have about me or my paranormal research group or anything else I'm involved in.
Very good. Albert, thanks. Very enlightening.
My pleasure, George. Thank
Albert
you very much
Taylor.
For inviting me.
He's a positive guy. He doesn't see too many demons. However, sometime this week, we'll get into that. Yes, we will. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Rob Ismail, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, dodging a tornado. I'll see you on our next edition of Coast to Coast AM. Until then, be safe, everyone.